This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/listen. Greenlight.com/listen.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You can trust podcasts to deliver results for your business. 80% of podcast listeners say they'll consider a brand recommendation by their favorite host. Even more impressive, 88% have taken action because of a podcast ad. If you're looking to connect with highly engaged audiences, now's the time to dive in. Download Podcast Pulse 2024 for all the latest insights and see how podcast ads can drive real results for you.
Hey, Alarmy. Check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content.
I do feel like it should be addressed that we did talk about this previously, but like the spacing and font makes for a very specific page. So this 97 pages, if you actually, you know, this was like stretched out like when you were trying to get hit your 10-page research paper in college. Yeah. It's probably really 53 pages. Well, I'm hoping the next book we choose is not like a dense 103 pages, which is actually like 190 if you were to, you know, courier new double spaces.
I will say, too, that the size of the book is very small.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's not the regular size of a book, right?
No.
This is...
It's a mini.
Foster by... Claire Keegan.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the 1996 rock opera musical Rent. Here's what you need to know.
December 24th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. From here on in, I shoot without a script.
Rent begins on Christmas Eve in 1989 in New York City's East Village. Mark, a filmmaker, and his roommate Roger, a guitarist recovering from heroin addiction, live in a dilapidated loft. Benny, once their friend, now their landlord, threatens eviction if they don't pay rent.
How we gonna pay? How we gonna pay? How we gonna pay last year's rent?
Mark struggles with loneliness after his girlfriend Maureen, a performance artist, left him for Joanne, a lawyer. Collins, a former roommate and a computer genius, is mugged on the street, where he is later helped by Angel, a vibrant drag queen and street percussionist. The two bond over their shared HIV-positive status and fall in love. That evening, Roger meets Mimi, a dancer and drug user who lives in the same building and flirts with him.
I didn't recognize you without the handcuff.
We could light the candle.
Mimi, who is also HIV positive, tries to draw Roger out of his shell. They hide their illness from each other for the time being. But Collins and Mark successfully convince Roger to join them in a support group meeting. The group of friends gather for Maureen's performance, protesting Benny's eviction plans. Maureen's avant-garde piece, Over the Moon, lampoons corporate greed while highlighting the community's struggles. Afterward, at a local cafe, the act ends with the ensemble singing La Vie Bohème, a spirited anthem celebrating their unconventional lifestyle, creativity, and resistance. Act 2 begins at the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve. The cast sings the iconic Seasons of Love, inviting themselves and the audience to reconsider how we measure our lives.
525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year?
Mimi and Roger's relationship deepens when they both admit they're HIV positive, but Roger's jealousy over Mimi's interactions with Benny causes a rift in their connection. Joanne and Maureen's relationship is equally tumultuous. Maureen's flirtatious nature creates friction, and their differing personalities lead to arguments about trust and commitment. Angel's health begins to deteriorate, but Collins remains devoted, providing unwavering support as Angel faces the progression of his disease. Mark is offered a corporate job at a news network, which forces him to grapple with his identity as an artist and activist. The group's unity crumbles when personal conflicts and external pressures become overwhelming. Roger leaves New York for Santa Fe, Mimi spirals further into her addiction, and Joanne and Maureen break up after a volatile argument. Angel's death is the climax of the act. At his funeral, the group confronts their grief and guilt, reflecting on the love and joy Angel brought into their lives. After Angel's death, the group begins to heal. Collins honors Angel's memory by continuing to support those in their community. Roger, still conflicted about his feelings for Mimi, returns to New York. He writes a song for her, finally overcoming his creative block. Mark quits his corporate job and completes a documentary. Joanne and Maureen reconcile, realizing that their love is worth fighting for. And Mimi, who had been missing, is found by the group, unresponsive from an apparent drug overdose. Roger's song, which he sings to her in desperation, becomes a moment of catharsis, and miraculously, Mimi regains consciousness. She tells the group she had a vision of Angel, urging her to hold on. The finale, No Day But Today, encapsulates the musical's central message. The importance of living fully and authentically, despite uncertainty and loss. Fun facts, aka death stats. Jonathan Larson, who wrote Rent, died at age 35 of an aortic aneurysm on January 25th, 1996, the day after he had watched the last dress rehearsal and before Rent's first preview. Immediately after the musical's sold-out six-week run, it was extended. A bidding war quickly began for the right to produce the $240,000 show on Broadway, and the decision was made to reopen Rent with a projected budget of more than $2 million. Rent was an immediate critical and commercial success and became a pop culture hit. Dedicated fans were known as Rentheads. To allow young people the opportunity to attend the show, the practice of low-cost Broadway rush tickets which continues today, was instituted, making the seats in the first two rows of the orchestra available on a first-come, first-served basis. In 2005, Rent was adapted for the big screen and featured most of the original cast. The film brought in over $31 million. There are some changes between the musical and the film. The musical begins and ends on December 24th and was meant to be the present. However, the movie is set on precise dates from 1989 to 1990. Rent was the seventh longest-running Broadway show in history, running for 12 years and 5,123 performances. The production has grossed over $280 million. In 1996, Rent won both the Pulitzer Prize as well as four Tony Awards. Rent closed on Broadway on September 7th, 2008.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today, who doesn't want to be named a guest.
She's a guest. Are you a guest?
Is our associate producer, Crystal Dinsberg.
Hello.
Hello. It's all in the family today.
Yes.
I think the first thing we should ask Crystal is why she doesn't want to be considered a guest on the program.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's keeping me up at night.
Yes. Do it.
We're it's really like just blowing up Crystal here. She says she didn't want to be the guest.
I'm looking away. I'm looking away and I'm stirring my coffee. As
first thing
me.
She said these when my... she hopped on this Zoom was, I don't want to be a guest and I don't want to get asked.
Why are you Fair. Blowing me out in front of our audience? Our alarm?
I mean, for the listening audience at home, maybe it'd be good to just... Those of you who don't listen to the end credits of each podcast, like...
Which how dare you?
Yeah. You should go all the way to the end. You never know what end. Little nuggets should be there.
Sometimes yeah.
Crystal's our associate mm-hmm. producer. She does research for us.
Yes, she helps us find our guests.
Finds
experts.
Our amazing guest experts. Yeah. She deserves so much credit mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. the work that we do on this show. She makes things mm-hmm. easier for us.
Absolutely.
Right?
We couldn't do it without her. Every episode, I'd be like, "Where do I even begin?" And Crystal's then I like, and then I just hop on the dock or I text Crystal and I say, "Help." Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, these are my family members. It's like your family members bragging about you. That's what's happening right now. So no, it's they're amazing. I love these people.
This is a fun one. So Crystal and I randomly work in the same studio lot. And one time I was turning into into my gate like I do every day. Mm-hmm. And I see a car pull up next to me like... Oh my God. I think there might have been a honk. There might have been a little honk. Crystal pulls up and turns in front of me to go and make a right like before me. And I think, who's this person? And there I see Crystal. Mm-hmm. And then she just starts waving. And I go, oh, okay, you go.
Oh, my goodness, you guys.
Crystal, are you an aggressive driver?
No, I'm not. I was just asking her if I could go in the other lane because there's...
She was asking me a question.
Yes.
You're right. There was, there's two lanes. And my lane with the pass was just going really slow. But the other lane where you can just kind of like drive through and your car gets recognized, it was totally empty. And
okay, so I have a question. Crystal, since we're going to let you off the hook by not making you do a little alarm, I'm going to ask you just one simple question. Somebody's in front of you at a stoplight and the light goes green and they haven't gone yet. Are you the type of person that waits, that taps on the horn, or that honks the horn?
I wait. That day.
Wait, hang on. Would you wait for an entire cycle? Like, long do you?
Honestly, because I just watched, not too long ago, there's this movie Unhinged or something like that.
About road rage and stuff.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah.
I think Chris's question is like, have you always been that person? Right?
Yeah, I'm curious.
I think I would lightly tap, but I would be careful of getting into the other lane. Like if there was only one lane, which was our case, There was another lane that was open, which is how I was able to pull up next to Rebecca. Now it sounds like I'm talking to a cop and I'm trying to explain what happened. But yeah, I would normally would not do that. I actually think I might have ridden past Rebecca at some point and kind of recognized, like, I think that's Rebecca. I don't know. So I kind of did that trick of like, let me see if that's her.
Let me see and if my friend will let me in.
Yes, yeah. Because the other line, because I would have been really late. I was going earlier because yeah. I have to start the room earlier.
Right.
So there was like a line, the way that the lot is built, I think I'm very alarmed by the fact that people are all trying to get in one lane when there's another access lane for people right. that wow. can get it's to work and not have to stop.
It's a bottleneck. Crazy. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a great, that's
they
a
really
great,
have to fix it.
That's a great little alarm.
Do you know what else is full of bottlenecks? Ooh. New right. York City.
Yeah.
Center of the universe.
That's right.
Times are times shitty, are shitty. But I'm pretty sure they can't get work.
And guess what?
Great transition.
Thank you.
Well done, Clayton.
I mean, standing ovation. Can we put some kind of sound effect here?
Yeah, we're going to let Molly go nuts. Hey, Molly, the editor. She's going to go absolutely nuts on this one. Don't worry about it. We'll pay all the royalties. Just
mm-hmm. It'll be worth it. Yeah.
Hey, Molly.
Now, the Rent is... I don't know about you guys, but Rent was my whole,
yep.
It was my everything high school experience.
Yeah.
It was
that's
huge.
How cool it. We were. Yeah.
It was the coolest, best, most groundbreaking, cutting edge, grungy, kind of like artsy, like those are artists. And that's what we were aspiring to be.
Oh.
Poor, AIDS-ridden artist.
I didn't understand the whole.
Yes, I didn't understand what I was listening to, but I felt like I wanted to be their friends. Like I was singing Mimi songs, and then I realized who Mimi was. Like
yes.
as I got older, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh wait,
maybe I'm not saying? A Mimi.
Yeah. But take me out tonight. Oh my yes. gosh, I was blowing that, and I was like, yeah. And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh. Like,
I mean, it was just so formative.
Yeah,
and then, completely. You know, personally, like we later moved to New York City and I found that it wasn't what I thought it was
right.
going to be.
What, the musical or New York City wasn't?
New York City. Right, I thought right. it was going to be Rent. I mean, right. we were going to NYU. And it was, and I was living in the East Village.
Right.
My
Which I think by
year.
Then, I feel like it was still kind of like a little grungy, but it was like fully cool and gentrified and like,
yeah.
Not,
I mean,
not the like
you would
tenement.
Go to St. Mark's. It was like almost like a tourist attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, the
yeah,
East Village.
Yeah. What was it? Benny took over.
Benny
yeah.
took
Benny,
over.
Benny took over. Benny is such a prescient and useful kind of. Character in this piece.
Oh my God.
As he represents what, and if you go to New York now, boy oh boy,
it's all like, Benny's.
It's all Benny. It's all Benny. All it's Benny. True. Only Benny.
Benny won.
That's the
Benny won.
There are no
the
more
The sequel
artists.
Of Rent.
That's the sequel.
Is called Benny's. should we start off by putting Benny up on the board? I mean, we could put Benny's heart. And this was a coin termed yesterday. Chris and I decided to watch the 2005 Rent movie.
Movie, yeah.
Just to,
not
you know,
great.
No, not great, but
you know,
it wasn't as bad as I remembered it.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. And also just what a joy, because it was such a return to a personal movie for
yeah.
us. You know,
yeah, yeah.
I saw the play when I was in high school.
Sure.
And, you know, yep. and then it was all over. And that iconic poster, like, I feel like everyone
yes.
had that poster on their wall.
Yeah.
So it was just everywhere. And so to return to it and get to see the people who originated the songs and the
yeah.
and the cast,
yeah, really
you know,
cool.
Idina Menzel and all
Adam
these,
Pascal,
Adam Pascal,
Daphne you know. Vega.
Yeah,
well,
no.
Daphne Roman Vega isn't in the movie.
No,
it's played by Rosario Dawson.
Yes,
and
know.
You know, I, growing up listening to the soundtrack, you know, then you hear Rosario Dawson like she doesn't have the character in her voice that Daphne Rubin Vega does. Yeah. But
Crystal,
I will say her performance is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think good. Crystal looks Rosario Dawson?
No, I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
I kind of think so.
Could you do it, Crystal? Are you up for the task? Do you want to audition for
I am not going to audition. Again, I was just here, you guys, to listen. Well,
I was just going to say Crystal sort of made a gesture when you brought up Rosario Dawson.
Uh-huh. I did.
I was gonna ask her what that meant.
Your thoughts there?
I need Daphne. I don't know what she was doing. I'm sure there was a good reason, but like, I just, that grit that...
Yeah.
That Rebecca was just talking about. Yes.
Well, I'll tell you. I think what it is. No, what I think is it's the character Mimi is the one character who gets called out for her age. Her age is such a big part of the musical because she's
pretty young.
I'm 19, but I'm old for my age.
Yeah. Right.
I was born to be bad.
Right.
And Daphne Rubin Vega at that time, they were all the same. I looked this up and they were all the same age when the musical came out. So they were all born like 55, 54. So they must have been in 1996. I'm sorry. They were not 55, 50. They're 55, 54 now.
Right.
So in 1996, how old would they have been?
Like that late was 20s?
30 or, years late. Wow. They must have been mid 20s. So 24, 25 when the musical came out. And by the time the movie came out, which was 10 years later, they were 35.
Right.
So it would have been hard to,
It was, there was Daphne probably a casting thing.
Yeah.
And Mimi, and then you have Rosario Dawson, who's like,
was a name
say
then.
What you will about, but she's, she's electric and an incredible performer herself in her own right. But I know what you mean, Crystal, the voice, and Rebecca and I were talking about that yesterday, the voice of Daphne Rubin Vega is just
that's the power of the original Broadway cast for any musical. You get so attached to the way that you hear it that first time, the way that those artists did it, that when people start coming in, even if they are big names, you kind of feel like they're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
you actually have this all wrong. Like, you're not even close. Like, what are you doing?
How
should we get started? And I just want to just ask Rebecca, how should we frame this? Are we asking who's to blame for missing the rent being overdue, and these evictions that sort of spur on the story?
I think it's who's to blame for the friends not being able to pay their rent.
Love that.
Okay.
So this just like depletion of income and currency that we can't put it together. We can't scrape together rent.
No. And let's start by putting Benny up on the board.
Okay. We got him.
Benny's heart, perhaps. You know, there's the line in
what's the difference
that says, well, I'll tell you, this is the line. What happened to Benny? What happened to his heart and ideals he once pursued?
Yeah.
We should sing it every year.
Really good.
That's so good. That's why I say hello. That's so good.
Yeah. So there's Benny's heart.
Yes.
Do we want Benny's heart, or do we also want Benny?
Let's go back and talk about the relationship here.
Yeah.
Because Benny was their former roommate. Benny was Mark and Collins and Maureen's roommate back in the day.
Right.
And now Benny's gone. He married Rich.
Married up.
He married up. He's now he's the landlord to the building.
Yeah. Well, he represents the interests of the landlord, right? Who's his in-law, his father-in-law.
Okay.
Yes. And
he's a shill. Like, he's a middle manager. Like, it's not even his money. He has a new god. It's the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and Benny says to them when he acquires the building, or when he marries into the building, that they're not going to pay rent. Yeah, they're golden.
Right.
But something has changed in Benny's heart now.
We don't know. Is it ever really explained why he suddenly is like, oh no, like, you guys owe me that rent? And like, it's not like, I correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not like, he's trying the cyber studio, I guess. Like, is that why he wants to
he wants to build a, like, what, do we ever find out what that is? And is that why he wants them out?
No, I think that's like a bone he throws over to Mark when he says, so Benny shows up. He's like, dude, you have to pay me for rent for the last year.
Right.
They're like, obviously we don't have it. I mean, they don't even have electricity in that house.
Right.
Or in their beautiful loft apartment.
Yes. Which is now probably worth like $3.5 million.
So spacious, yeah. so much sunlight.
Oh my God, gorgeous. Those windows.
Yeah, no, that thing's like $7,500 a month. Like.
Mm-hmm. They took over the New Girl place. I mean, like, it's the same situation in New Girl. Same situation. You're like, how do these people with these jobs afford them?
No, it makes no sense.
But, so they now have to pay for rent. But what's happening, of course, Maureen is doing a protest nearby. Mm-hmm. And I think Benny, as like an offering, says, if you stop Maureen's protests, then I'll help, you know, you won't have
then
to pay
they
rent.
Can stay. Yeah.
And you can stay and we can build this essentially like a studio, right?
Yes.
It's like he calls it a state-of-the-art digital virtual interactive studio.
Right. Sounds so 90s. No, yeah. So 90s. What does that even mean?
What'd you say, Crystal? What'd you say?
That's too long. Like, you know, dude, just say what you need.
He's,
come on.
He's
now.
Making up a couple of those words.
It does. Yeah.
He just found like, out what internet means.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do an internet thing.
I'll use a big name and throw them off. Right. Yeah.
And good for them. They don't fall for it. Like they call rat. They cry. What do you call it when he's like call bullshit right away?
Yeah. They you know, that says a lot about their desire to maintain this bohemian like artist lifestyle.
Right.
Which perhaps we should put that up on the board.
I think absolutely should. Yeah. What do you want to put, the bohemian lifestyle?
Yeah. Let's put the bohemian lifestyle. You know, I'll read a few excerpts here because I find this is interesting. So this is from the New York Times. He, Jonathan Larson, knew bohemian life. He was living it from the grungy Greenwich Street apartment with a four-legged relic of a bathtub dominating the kitchen to the dynamic street life of artists, immigrants, addicts, and hippie holdouts in the neighborhood to his circle of friends who shared clothes, money, and sometimes lovers.
Mm-hmm.
So technically he lived in the Greenwich Village. So he was on the west side of Manhattan. And but at the time in the 90s, or actually he started writing this in 89.
Mm-hmm.
The East Village was a very rough neighborhood.
Especially in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of drugs, you know, so many people experiencing homelessness.
Crime,
yeah. It was a rough place.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a waiter. Now it was the Moon. Oh goodness, where did he work? I'm sure it'll pop up here.
You want me to look something up?
It's he worked at a diner that I feel like Moon Dance Diner in Soho. Does that ring a bell?
Diner. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so he worked at the Moon Dance Diner in Soho, and he was an artist himself. He was writing. He had a play, Superbia.
Right.
That he had developed, and he was trying to make it as a playwright or a musical composer and lyricist.
Yep.
Now, let's read further on here. This is from Vanity Fair. It's a head-scratching sequence of events, especially when observed in the age of side hustles and SponCon. Why are filmmaker Mark and musician Roger so determined not to fulfill the conditions of their lease? Why do they feel entitled to live in a spacious loft without contributing a cent financially? Why do they consider the very concept of getting a day job to be selling out? Jonathan Larson spent years waiting tables at a diner while trying to get rent off the ground. How come none of his characters have to do the same? this is from American Theater. Well, the old thing about how you can make a killing, but oh, this is from an interview with Jonathan Larson.
Okay,
so this
okay.
is him talking about Bohemia, I guess. Well, the old thing about how you can make a killing, but you can't make a living is absolutely true. I'm proof of that. Now I have the ability to compete trying to write jingles, trying to do other kinds of music that makes money. And I haven't put myself out there. My feeling is that it's not what I want to do, and I would be competing with guys who do want to do it. So I'm just working on musicals. It's like a huge wall, and I'm chipping away at it with a screwdriver. I just keep making a little more headway. I've had a lot of very generous grants, but they all go to the play. I get a little stipend, but I can't live off the commission. So this is something he was talking about. I think he found himself in this predicament where we don't have time to do it all. You can't work
right
at the diner and also write.
Okay. This right. is good. So, so can we put up on the board idealism versus pragmatism? Like, this is the pull. He's being pulled into this idealist version of himself where he's just a creator and he gets paid to just be this pure creator, and the pragmatist who needs to pay bills and pay the rent, which we know is rent. What do we think about that?
I like that. I also feel like there's a little bit of what I also want to put on the board next to that, and also kind of in tandem with the bohemian lifestyle, is this concept of selling out, which yes. I think right. are like really competing, where it's like there is a romanticization, is that how you say it? Romanticizing of the bohemian lifestyle. It's like these are real artists. Making something for corporate America is not a real artist. That's selling out, right? But like, you need to, what else are you doing as a young struggling artist other than trying to do something big and get discovered and make an impact, right? So it's like, there's like a weird like conflict between being a real artist and doing something that's worthwhile and notable, but also like not wanting people, you know, like,
to pay for
you
saying? Money for it.
Yeah, or like,
I love that though, because like what you're saying too is it's like the struggling artist mindset is so interesting, but it's also something we were all told, I'm sure, at some point, like wanting to do this for a living, wanting to entertain right. people, wanting to
right.
create art. And as a writer myself, like I know Rebecca's also a writer. I'm sure, you know, we've got actors in the house, which is why this matters to us so much, but we all were theater people. And we all understand kind of those stories of people sleeping in their cars and people who are like really struggling. So then when you get this opportunity and you kind of like get close to something, it is hard because you still have rent to pay, but you're not able to pay it with your passion. And
right.
you could be the most talented person in the world, and until somebody plucks you up and gives you money,
totally,
like you're struggling. Like, we can relate to this because this is our life. Like, I'm literally making, I had another life and I literally quit that to pursue my dream. And now I feel more fulfilled, but I'm also very scared because LA rent is high. I really understand wanting to pursue your passion and not being able to afford rent. And sometimes you have to lean on other people. But I do want to get back, kind of circle back to where we were, which is that with Benny, first of all, he cheated with Maureen. I'm not very sympathetic to Benny. Like, everybody's like, yeah, he's the one who's really responsible. Like, I came across a lot of those articles. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. But dude wasn't the best friend. Like, also, let's not like make him the hero completely. Like, yes, he's responsible. He's the one with the responsible job. But also, if you're telling your friends you can live rent-free and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm switching that up on you. Like, that's...
Yeah, what's going on?
Gonna be a... Yeah, like, that's gonna be a shock to the system.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/listen. Greenlight.com/listen.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You can trust podcasts to deliver results for your business. 80% of podcast listeners say they'll consider a brand recommendation by their favorite host. Even more impressive, 88% have taken action because of a podcast ad. If you're looking to connect with highly engaged audiences, now's the time to dive in. Download Podcast Pulse 2024 for all the latest insights and see how podcast ads can drive real results for you.
Is that like, was he, well, okay, so we're hang on. I just want to add a little bit of a structure here. So something Crystal said and something Clayton said, I think are two different things that can go up on the board. I think Clayton is talking about a sort of, not wanting to sell out as a, or just sort of like the, what is it called? Stigma, the selling out, stigma of
success, or what do you call that?
Yeah. Stigma of success, because you could tell they weren't super clear on what exactly is selling out. And I think when you talk to people and they say, oh, such and such is a sellout, but then when you dig in on that conversation, you find it's a little like goofy and gooey, like what they actually mean.
What do they mean?
Well, so I think ambiguity around selling out. And then I just want to just to Crystal, what she was saying, which I think is just the hard knocks of the creative life. You know what
love
I mean?
Love that.
Mm-hmm. I love
hard
that.
Knocks. Yeah, hard knocks is good.
I do want to like just briefly touch on the fact that I feel like they do differentiate in the musical, where Benny just kind of represents the success, right? But like very corporate, like very, he just married up. Yes. Now he's like a landlord. Whereas right. Mark, there is an opportunity where his footage gets him an offer.
Yeah.
To start writing for
Buzzline.
Yes, which seems like a natural progression of what he's pursuing. But for some reason, he's so adverse because it takes him away from, as Chris was pointing out, like his real passion. But it's like, that is kind of what you're working towards. So it's funny to see them, you know, the juxtaposition and still the resistance to like accept the new job that you kind of earn through your like grungy street art, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
And
go
Mark ahead. Mark eventually takes this job.
Yeah.
That's how he gets the money to later pay for the rent. And I think that it's interesting that it's Mark who is a representation or kind of a stand-in for the playwright, Jonathan Larson, right? He's the storyteller. He's the one who I think, you know, is representing Jonathan Larson, and he is the one that's willing to make money off of his art and kind of sell out. At least he's not selling out totally like Benny, where he just totally gave up on the artistry of anything.
Right.
But he's willing to make some compromise.
Well, I think that there's another little sort of, and we're getting, you know, we should put some names on the board eventually because we're getting pretty esoteric here. But I think Mark and Roger's inability to crack down and write this fucking song really like bugs me.
Yeah.
Like finish a song, even if it's bad, then play it.
change it, make it better. He literally will not commit. He's got no follow through.
Yeah, Rodgers.
And I think
he's dealing with trauma. He's got his. He's coming back from some trauma.
It's true.
Okay, so I want to talk about Rodgers' trauma because I think that this encapsulates like a bigger picture of what's happening in the world of Rent, which I think is important and we need to put up on the board. Now, Roger is HIV positive. He's dealing with a huge loss. His girlfriend died by suicide. She was also HIV positive. I think she felt guilty for giving him the virus. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's going on with Roger. And I think we have to put the 1980s, 1990s AIDS crisis up on the board. And the emotional toll that it takes on this young community.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that clearly permeated a lot of what was going on in the play.
Was something that Larson really, that was very personal to Larson. Mm-hmm. I'll read a little excerpt here from NPR. Jim Nicola, who's artistic director of the New York Theater Workshop, where Rent premiered, says the script came to them by lucky accident. As their theater was constructed on East 4th Street, Larson rode by on his bicycle. Nicola says Larson, quote, walked in and saw his friend and our production manager, George Zenos, and he was very excited because he had this thing set in the East Village and he was looking for the right theater in the East Village to do it. And then George got it to me. Nicola was intrigued with the early draft and the theater embarked on a development process sponsoring readings and workshops. Actor Anthony Rapp was hired to play Mark Cohen, a documentary filmmaker. I've always felt that Mark was the closest sort of stand-in for Jonathan, he says. Jonathan himself was a cis-het HIV-negative man who was watching what was happening around him and responding to it and trying to find a way to channel the grief and anger and hopelessness that he was feeling into something positive. And Mark is very much doing that. Before rehearsals started, Larson invited the cast over to his loft. His mismatched furniture from the street for a potluck peasants feast, Rap remembers. He gave us this really lovely toast, which was like, you're bringing to life my friends, some of whom are friends that I've lost. Mm. And so I wanted to open my home to you.
Mm. Wow. So he really captured this moment, obviously, in a meaningful way to a lot of people.
Want to point out, because this is important, in the 80s, the life expectancy for people who were living with AIDS was maximum 3 years.
Right. But you have that line in the play too, like, because reason says I should have died 3 years ago when they're at the meeting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's something sort of poetic about the sort of parallel between paying rent and, and living with this disease, which is like, there's a temporariness to it. There's sort of a transientness to it. Mm-hmm. And so there's like how meaningful is that money at the end of the month, right? To you, if you don't know how long you'll be around, really.
Wow.
And also, like, if you don't know how long you're going to be around, how much time do you want to waste on the corporate job that you don't want to do versus your passion? You know,
exactly.
Right.
There's this really interesting excerpt. It's kind of long, but I do want to read it. It's about Larson's experience with his friends. This is from Broadway Fandom. Will I? A song which takes place during a life support meeting and expresses the pain and fear of living a life with AIDS, was inspired by a real event. Larson attended a meeting of Friends Indeed, an organization that helps people deal with illness and grief and the other emotions, much like life support. After that first time, Larson attended the meetings regularly. The people present at the life support meeting in the show, such as Gordon, Allie, and Pam, carry the names of Larson's friends who died of AIDS. In the Broadway show, the names of the characters in that particular scene where they introduce themselves are changed nightly to honor the friends of the cast members who are suffering from or have died of AIDS.
During one meeting, a man stood up and said that he was not afraid of dying. He did, however, say that there was one thing he was afraid of. Would he lose his dignity? Mm. From this question stemmed the first line in the single stanza of this song. Mm-hmm. When Jonathan's HIV positive friends heard this scene, they told him that having AIDS wasn't so easy to accept. It made you angry and resentful too, and the song didn't match that. Jonathan then added a part where Gordon says that he has a problem with his credo, my T cells are low. I regret that news, okay? Paul, the leader of the meeting, replies, okay, but Gordon, how do you feel today?
How do you feel today? Best I felt all year. And why choose fear?
That's it.
Yeah, I'm a New Yorker.
Fear's my life. Mm. So that was the inspiration for... iconic moment.
Well, I wanted just on the tail end of that, another, because obviously AIDS is a huge character in the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another big character in the show, which is the end of that little sequence, is New York City. Mm. I think we've got to put New York City on the board, because as much as like being an artist and dealing with AIDS is a part of this, it's also very specific to this location because it is so cool and so vibrant, but also so expensive and so dangerous. Like, it's a big reason why these people are having a hard time paying their rent.
Can we throw gentrification in there? Because that is the big reason why they couldn't, like, why things changed for them is because of gentrification, which I get, but I also know people who were affected by that they had to move out. Like, people who used to be able to live in certain neighborhoods had to move out because of gentrification. So yes, it does benefit some people, but then other people, where do they go? And people seem to throw them by the wayside. So there is something about gentrification, I think, and what you just said too.
They're literally protesting like them trying to remove like a houseless encampment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I there's a line in the play or in the musical where there's the homeless woman character.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this?
He calls out Mark for filming her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I wish I could find the lyrics to
she
that.
She says,
part
"Do you have a dollar?"
Yeah, but that she kind of like embodies that anger.
Mm. Yeah, because she's like, I don't want you to make a buck off of me, right?
Yeah.
Mark's trying to make a buck off of her.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty impressive that she was like, she called him out for exploiting her.
Right, and how funny too that like there's an argument to be made that they kind of are, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They're exploiting.
As cool as they think that they are, they're like also making money off of the homeless people who are just like trying to live.
Did we put addiction on the board yet?
No, but we must. We should. Yeah. Oh man, I couldn't find that lyric, but it's okay.
I'll find it. Okay. You put up addiction and let's talk a little bit about heroin. We gotta move heroin a little bit.
Yeah, we are. We're
long. I know. Let's put heroin addiction up on the board. In 1996, this is from the National Library of Medicine, approximately 6.5% of all deaths among people aged 15 to 24 and approximately 10% of all deaths among those 25 to 34 were due to opioid overdose. Mm. So, I mean, obviously now I think it's probably even higher. But it was something that was really taking over the youth, and in the play, so many of the characters, I mean, Mimi is really struggling with addiction. Mm-hmm. Roger seems to have overcome,
but he's borderline. He could relapse any day.
Yeah.
Does feel like that.
I don't know about Collins. Collins, I'm not sure if he's an addict, but he does get, when he gets beat up in the beginning, this is also based apparently on Jonathan Larson's life as well, where his friends would call him from a payphone across the street and then he would throw his keys down so that they could come up and he wouldn't have to like walk all the way down and let, because the buzzer was broken. Mm. And so he was like a, I don't know how many story walk up, you know? Mm-hmm. So in the first moments of the play, he drops his keys and it's Collins who's going to come up, but then he gets beat up and he says that he didn't have any money, but they took his stuff.
Right.
Which I'm assuming is implying his drugs.
Right. And they also, He also is the one providing alcohol every in like 9 a.m.
Right.
Pulling out the stoli. So we can infer that he has addiction. I think addiction in general is probably a good thing too.
Can we put youth on the board to the Chris's point of drinking at 9 a.m. Like nobody, adults aren't doing that. You know.
Well, no. It's,
hey, what
it's,
was the last
I'm
brunch
sorry.
You
no,
went
no,
to?
It, me, oh. It's not 9 a.m.
Oh, it's not.
December 24th, 9 p.m.
Eastern
Standard
Time.
That's the first line of the.
It's Christmas Sorry. Eve. It's right. They're yeah. pushing like,
no, you're right.
But Sorry. I do think you can put, I mean, these are, there's room for youth. Kids forget to pay their rent or don't realize the importance of it all the time, or like get wrapped up in their ideals before they grow up and start to realize like maybe they can compromise a little bit.
They actually yeah. talked about the MTV generation, and what I was reading is like, that's kind of like who this was made for, so right. that we could see ourselves in mm-hmm. that. So I think maybe not just like regular use, because I don't know sure. if everybody, but I think our generation in particular, sure. it was important for us to see like, these are real issues that people are dealing with, and we're asking people to pay rent. Like, I think that was, yeah, the MTV generation. We went through a lot. So I think that's.
Totally.
Yeah. Now, there's a song that in the movie it's the Rent song, right, where you know the last line, you know we gotta pay rent, we're not gonna pay rent,
okay,
because
everything is rent,
which is the cheesiest
such a cheesy line, but here we go. Apparently rent also means torn apart.
Okay.
Go on.
From
in what language?
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Torn apart?
I'm trying to find where I read
you're
this.
You're looking
one
up
second.
Where you read it.
One
you
should,
I'm
going to
put
second.
Rent on the board.
It'd be funny if we just ended the podcast there. Rent right. also means torn apart. This has been a... This
Thanks
has been
for joining us.
I thought we were going to end with no day but today. Like, I really did. I was like,
okay. No. So, apparently... So, he wanted the title to be Rent. Okay. And the Billy Aronson, who wanted to create this musical with him and brought him the idea of doing La Boheme. So like using the opera La Boheme to be the basis of this musical. He did not like that as a title. Okay. But Larson insisted, and he pointed that out, that Rent also means torn apart, apparently,
right,
which kind of changes the meaning of that last line where everything is rent. And I, in rewatching the movie, which we did yesterday, I was also thinking about, obviously they're talking about literal rent,
right?
But they're also talking about like love, and how you kind of, you know, live
There's
in my
whole,
house
yeah.
I'll be your shelter, you
a new
know
lease, you are my love,
you new lease, you are my love. So it's like almost like relationship, so like we're renting each other's hearts,
our time
for a time
sure,
period
sure,
you know
sure.
And we and you could say that about the friendships in this
this
in
is
this play
such what? I'm sorry, I know exactly what you're saying, and I could just picture like 90s whatever Jonathan Larson and all the artists like no, but like what is rent, and having this like really artsy fartsy like it means that, you know, like the kind of stuff that like non-artists are like, what are you nerds talking yeah. about?
Rent is rent. Like, what the fuck.
But I'm like,
have you guys seen have you guys seen Tick Tick Boom? Because that yes, is such yes. a good, yeah, okay. So that, everything you just said, I could picture that scene of them, like, arguing, like, the concepts.
Yeah.
I love that, because that's what we're doing right now anyway, but, I mean, but we're on a podcast, so it's different. But I think, too, it's interesting because there's so much relationship drama, and paying rent when you're going through relationship drama, like, I keep wanting to say Adina, but I know her name is Maureen, but it's like, going through all of that and then having to pay rent, and you're like, do I even want to live with this person? Like, what's going on?
And like, what the kind of like the going in and out of people's lives is also like a physical thing, right? So it's like, you am I going to pay you rent? Like, where you live is where you pay rent, where you have relationships with.
Do we put that on the board?
I think the drama of
yeah
of the what was I gonna call it? The love drama.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, the relationship drama.
Just to be specific about that too, there's like a lot of real drama and resentment because Benny is the one who's collecting rent, but it's alleged mm-hmm. that he had an affair with Mimi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that could be a literal reason why they're not wanting to or unable to pay rent because of that like resentment or jealousy.
Yeah. And then Mark used to date Maureen and, you know, Maureen was their ex-roommate.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't she Maureen kissing out a bunch of people? Wasn't she just your face, Rebecca?
She's what's the song? Take me for what I am, Crystal. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Except her.
And on the table and just walking around making out with people. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, Maureen's Maureen and she's always gonna be mm-hmm. Maureen. And Joanne needs to, you know,
step in line.
That's the rent that Joanne has to pay if mm-hmm. she wants to live in the apartment.
The emotional rent that we pay.
Emotional toll of watching mm-hmm. Maureen be who she is.
Well, same with Maureen, though. She's got to accept yep. Joanne for being not the artist. I mean, because I would say Maureen is the most of all of the characters. She is the epitome true artist, right? Like out there, uncompromising, kind mm-hmm. of like never going to sell out.
She finishes her stuff, like,
right. And then she's writing a new one after. Like, she's like coming up with a new protest piece, whereas Roger can't do anything. Mark is like, you know,
Mark's creating at the moment. And what's the line? The opposite of war isn't peace.
Peace, it's creation. Oh God!
Okay, we need to get to this board, guys. We're way behind. Is there anything else we should put up on the board? I do want to put Benny's father-in-law up on the board.
Okay.
As just, he's the money man, and he could definitely be just, you know, if he wanted to be a Medici and just say, well, what is going on in the, and he went and watched some of Mark's videos and heard some of Roger's songs. Like, okay, you guys can stay here for a while mm-hmm. and, you know, I'll support you guys. But he obviously,
I think that's a good, yeah. Let's put Benny's father-in-law.
I want to put, based on what you were reading earlier, Rebecca, the article about like, why do they feel like they don't have to pay rent? I feel like we can, yeah. I mean, this is like not really taking the artist's side, but there's a little bit of entitlement, right? Where it's like,
oh yeah.
Entitlement?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. To feel like you can just like make some weird handshake deal with your former friend and then like live rent free forever. Yeah,
totally.
Like
totally.
I mean, I know that we have to move on and I know we're running out of time, but I do think it's something that we should discuss. Angel and the Akita. Have we talked about the Akita?
Oh, the Evita. Dog. Yeah, the dog. That is so, his wife's dog that she kills, right?
So Angel gets stopped on the street by a rich person and gets essentially paid $1,000 guarantee to kill a dog. And it's an Akita that I'm assuming that the Akita jumps out of a window and
that's dies. What's implied. I think the Akita is thrown out of a window, but yes.
So,
right.
Angel comes back, he's got money, and that's what they're all when they have the La Vie Boheme moment, he's the one who pays for the night, right? And then in that moment we realize Benny says that they're out mourning their family dog.
Yes. So Angel got paid to kill Benny's dog.
Without knowing. I mean, in all fairness, it doesn't seem like
Yeah,
Angel
they don't know
knew.
Each other.
My goodness. That's drama.
That was something that I totally did not pick up on as a young.
It happens quick.
We
should put animal cruelty just up on the board just for the heck of it.
I know, but I'll never blame Angel because he's just the best.
He's a sweetheart.
Good character in the play. Oh, okay. What a good character. Okay, we got a hefty board. Let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, and spend wisely, and parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/listen.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, who's to blame for the rent that's due in rent, I guess? Is it Benny, Benny's heart, the bohemian lifestyle, idealism versus pragmatism, selling out, stigma of success, the hard knock of the artist's life, 1980s and 1990s AIDS crisis, always fighting for something, New York City, gentrification, heroin addiction, youth and the MTV generation, rent itself, the relationship drama, Benny's father-in-law, entitlement, or animal cruelty. I'll tell you two people who are not on the board, and that's the people who live in the apartment where the rent is due.
Mark and Roger.
Should we put them up?
Mark and Roger, put them up on the board. Yeah. How about you guys just figure rent out?
Yeah.
Figure it out how to pay the rent.
True.
I mean, Roger's so depressed that I think he's just having a hard time being motivated.
Yes, of course.
To do anything. And Mark has the weight of the world on his shoulders. On top of it all, he just got dumped by Maureen. So,
well, I will say, just while we're still in the sort of board zone, let's just put Mark, I think, alone. I mean, you could let Roger slip by saying, trauma, and like he's literally fighting for his life.
Sure.
But Mark does not have that excuse. I mean, he did get his heart broken by Maureen, so I guess you could say that's one thing. But he knows how to use a camera. He has certain skill sets that could be applicable. He could be a productive member of society. But he refuses.
Right. And yes, but he does pull through in the end.
No, of course he does eventually, but all the more proof that he's able to do it, more so than Roger. So I do want to sort of separate those two and put Mark up on the board by himself.
Okay.
Where do we begin with this board?
There's a lot to be folded, for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Go, Crystal. What do you think?
Okay. So I think that the bohemian lifestyle, I feel like Mark and Roger both go under that. I feel like that's a huge thing of like why they're not paying rent. So I think the people themselves fall under like an idea. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's just my
Mark and Roger.
Uh-huh. Both.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they ascribe to it.
Sure.
And are clearly living it.
Benny, do we fold Benny's heart into Benny or vice versa?
Yeah, I think we can fold Benny's heart into Benny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I will say, it's interesting. Well, whatever. This is a longer conversation, but
what changed him?
Well, right? What I'm curious about that. I'm curious what made him. I mean, obviously he maybe he just has better foresight. He saw this coming, right? Yeah, he saw this whole.
Or he's like, what are you going to, you're going to marry someone, you fall in love and then you marry into their family and you're going to fight the family and be like, no, let my friends live free in your building.
Yeah, that's true.
That's,
too. Mm-hmm.
That's why I would advocate for him going under the father-in-law. Like, I think the father-in-law is more to blame than him because of that.
Blame.
Sure.
Yeah.
The dynamic, the power dynamic there.
Yeah, because he changed. Yeah.
Although,
I'm just gonna say this, I'm gonna move on. Wouldn't you say though, like, hey, I'm married into this family, but I just want to let you know I made a deal with my friends.
Yes.
Could you honor that? Like, I don't know.
Couldn't you just sell that? Go sell that.
That's true.
I mean, eventually he gets the padlock or whatever off the door. He gets them their stuff back. So you can imagine there's a fight going on between Benny and his father.
Yeah, because he does change his mind. He does let them. So maybe he has more power than we think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I'm now, just so you know, literally scouring Benny lines in the musical.
I think heroin addiction, albeit very bad and obviously that like devastating to some of the characters, I don't feel like all of them are strung out to the point where they can't pay rent because of like drug issues. So I want to take that off.
That's fine with me.
Yeah. Go. I also think that we can take animal cruelty off the board.
Yeah, not to blame.
For heroin addiction, and I agree with animal cruelty. For heroin addiction, couldn't that go under MTV Generation? Well, I mean, that's like when it started like really emerging. So there's some things, I don't know, because I feel like the MTV Generation going through all of this dealt with the rent. Like, I don't know. Am I making sense?
Sure.
Although I do feel like we should separate the entire generation from addiction.
Yeah, I think agree. So too. I think the generation's too broad. I think we can cut that.
Yeah. And
we can also, I think relationship drama is too broad. Although, yes,
it
plays a lot into what's going on.
Maybe
it's
why they don't.
Major distraction.
Yeah.
It's a major.
It is a major distraction.
And have you ever been young and in love?
But there are other
it's
factors.
All you can think about.
There are other factors at play in terms
there are
of
young
being
people,
unwilling to pay any rent. Money to live in this apartment in Manhattan.
Okay.
And I think entitlement is a big part of what's going on.
Yeah.
What about the AIDS crisis? Are we blaming that for them not paying their rent?
I mean, it is causing a lot of the trauma.
And pain, yeah.
I guess to me, I would want it to be, I want more proof in the actual script that like there's actual discrimination based on their AIDS status that is somehow preventing them from making money in order to pay rent. But I just don't feel like that really exists. It's just like a part of 90s York.
Or it's or ways in which it's depleting their resources, their income.
Right.
Yeah, but I would also say like the toll, the emotional toll that it takes.
Sure.
On you. I mean,
but a lot of them seem to be like, not a lot of them, but like several of them are going to these meetings and managing and like, you know, like in kind of like
it's true. They're doing their
therapy
best.
And recovery to like, to the point where it's like, they're not so, it's not like they just got the news and they're all just unable to pay rent because of the status.
I think you're right. But I just do want to talk about how I think it's hard for us to understand what it must have been like to live in the East Village in the 80s when this virus is kind of taking hold and killing so many young people. Like I can't imagine if when I was 25 years old, like three of my friends died from my friend group, something like that.
No,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really hard
like,
to wrap your
that
head
is
around.
Huge.
Yeah.
I feel like the takeaway from that too, and there's been a lot of plays written about this in conversation, is just like what in the generations of people who died of AIDS, like what we lost culturally because so many of them were artists. And it's like, what would they have gone on to create had there been actual government action to like, you know, find a cure faster, which and is why it's so important here. Cause this is an artist play about artists and these people are dying.
And wasn't it Fran Lebowitz had that famous kind of observation where she was like, theater suffered so much during this crisis because attentive and educated and people, audiences with good taste died.
Right.
The audience that was the attentive audience with incredible taste,
empathy, and heart,
all
part
of this.
Yeah.
We're all part of these, you know,
artist community
and you know, sexually progressive community, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that those are the people who died. So yeah, she made that observation. I thought it was really like
mm-hmm. it was a huge loss.
Huge mm-hmm. loss. So okay, so we have to get back to this business here.
I think the exhaustion of always fighting for something, I mean, we're always
fighting.
That
goes into the bohemian lifestyle for me.
Yeah, I think so. And I do think that gentrification,
does
that either fall into New York City? Yeah, right?
I think so.
Especially knowing what we know now.
I mean, we saw the gentrification every year that we lived there from college. Yeah. And it's like, that was just like, that's like a city planning kind of thing.
And it also dealt with the epidemic of like the homeless encampments and stuff like that mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. of right. people getting pushed out. They can't afford, you know.
Now, idealism versus pragmatism, that falls into the bohemian lifestyle as well, right?
I agree.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Selling out. The stigma of success.
Is that also bohemian lifestyle? Those
kind of. Or,
yeah. There right. are these, I mean, the bohemian lifestyle feels kind of like it's a little, not vague, but it's like, I think the misconceptions around the bohemian lifestyle or.
I agree.
Or there's some, you know, slight, you know, if we're blaming why they can't pay rent, it's like, it's not only the glorification of the lifestyle, but it's also the, but it's also the, sort of a misunderstanding of or an improper
is it bohemia in a capitalist society? It's like there's something right. there's a conflict that's happening right, there exactly. you know
so
because like I think of I know we have some friends who live in London who there's like government subsidies for artists, right. you know, it's something that's like important for the community to right. have like an artist community. And we don't seem to have that here.
No, America does not have that. We have programs where like you can start a nonprofit theater company and you get significant tax
write-offs.
You get tax write-offs. So there's nothing, but it's not the kind of subsidizing that's available. There are private grants, but there are no publicly fund. Like the public does not, or rather, the Fed does not.
And there should be because it helps people escape. Like that's part of what would be helpful.
There's so many reasons why that should be. I totally agree. There's so many reasons why.
I want to say, I'm curious though, like the kind of like the root of like bohemian lifestyle, like, and maybe this is a longer, like a fact checking situation, but like, it almost kind of feels like back when that originated to be a bohemian was like, you were kind of like of royalty and you were like kind of bucking, you like, you weren't buying into the system. So you were just like a young bohemian, which is almost like you are essentially like the trust fund version of an artist where it's like, you have a lot of like, you come from like a aristocratic background, but you're going against that. I mean, I could just be making this up, you know what I mean? But like, it feels like there were bohemians, but they were wealthier, so they could do that. Mm. And this is a very like modern version of bohemian, where it's like, you're not like, to be able to like have a bohemian lifestyle, like you have to be funded.
The word means a socially unconventional person, especially one who is involved in the arts or socially unconventional in an artistic way. So it's somebody who is against the grain, who's artistic, like that's a bohemian. Yeah.
Right. So maybe
perhaps what we're circling here is that bohemian lifestyle is an easy word to say, it's a hard thing to define.
Right.
And maybe if Roger and Mark could have defined it a little better. They could have, you know, something could have, they're just, yeah, I love that, that collective, like the pie just came out of the oven, like, but yeah, like the hard to define bohemian lifestyle.
I think like it goes under the
it's
hard
confusing.
Not.
It's, yeah. it's like a confusing.
Right. And it's like, if you're a bohemian, like, can you make money or can you not? Are you a salad if you do and no longer a bohemian? Like, what's the rules of bohemian?
Yeah.
What are the rules?
rules of bohemian. Okay. That's what we should change it to.
Okay.
I like the Hard Knocks. I think that that's more, it could fall under what Chris had said, the hard knock of the artist's life. Like that's,
Is it Hard Knock or Hard Knocks?
I think it's Knocks.
The hard knocks of the artist's life.
Yeah,
I think that falls. I think we can fold that into the confusing rules of the bohemian lifestyle.
Okay.
I mean, I know that's different, but
I think there's a lot of crossover. I think of what we're talking about.
Yes.
Here.
Benny's father-in-law. I think at the end of the day, Benny could have stood up to his father-in-law. Sure. I guess.
But
I
don't see him
hard
enough.
To do, especially if.
We don't see him enough.
Funding.
We don't see him enough.
Just don't know. Entitlement. That's a big one. Left with five major ones.
Okay.
Benny, the confusing rules of the bohemian lifestyle, New York City, rent, just having the idea of rent, I guess.
You could probably take it off.
And entitlement. I mean, there are a lot of issues, you know, right now. Landlords and renters' rights. That's a huge conversation that we're having right now that I'm assuming people were having back then as well.
Inflation, income, all that stuff, you know, like cost of living and not keeping up with, you know.
But it doesn't matter. Pay me my money because you have to live here. You have no other option. Yeah.
So
I guess rent as a concept. Being it's just the too, reason
it's
why
really vague,
we're
right?
not paying rent. Yeah, it's not really working.
Yeah.
If anything, it's more the entitlement of the of Roger and Mark.
Well, also the entitlement of these landlords who literally don't supply power, but they're expecting to get the rent. You know what I mean? There's entitlement all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Like, what is it about you that makes that gives you the right to say this building is mine just because you inherited it or you made money in the market and now have the deed to it. You know, I mean, you can get real philosophical
in that sense.
But I mean, you can't take philosophy to the bank and get a loan. And you can't take it to your landlord and say philosophy and then get.
But you could take an idea and get a loan. And hope that idea turns into a $1 million or $1 billion.
But it can't be an idea for a musical about a bunch of people who can't pay rent.
No.
Because that idea, somebody already.
It already happened. Yeah. Here is it.
Okay. Here's what I'm thinking. I think we sent entitlement to the alarmist jail.
Wow.
And we slapped the confusing rules of the bohemian lifestyle.
Wow.
What are your thoughts?
Entitlement
feels victim blamey.
It like does. Just that,
it just feels that way. Like I know we got there and I remember the logic of it, but as we're saying it out loud, what do you think, Rebecca? Does it not?
Or we send the confusing rules of the bohemian lifestyle.
I feel like that to me is it hits a little bit more and then you slap so Benny. Funny. I mean entitlement. Yeah.
I just imagine somebody with like a hippie haircut and like some weed showing up to a party and being like, okay guys, so like what are the rules here? What are the rules? Like what are our rules? Like what?
It's really like, funny and actually it's great.
Pretty accurate. Like I think it's good too. I wish I could go to some cool parties sometimes and be like, what are the rules?
Yeah, what
are
we here? Doing?
Like, what's happening? What are we doing?
Can you imagine Charles and Camilla in there with
this person? Oh my gosh.
Oh right. Yeah. Charles and Camilla with these rules.
Oh my
god. These confusing rules.
Okay, I like that. I think let's send that to the alarmist jail. And do we slap entitlement or do we slap Benny?
Fold entitlement into Benny because he is like really like he's not even he turns the power off to try and that's a crappy thing for a landlord to do to literally withhold power to get you to vacate. You know, like that's a crime.
Yeah.
So Benny's doing that. So I think we slap him for that.
That's true. I mean, I will say they haven't paid rent for an entire year.
True. They're lucky. They got a good friend.
They do.
I don't know if we can slap Benny. I mean,
no?
I mean, yeah. It's complicated. Look, Benny's not going to the alarmist jail. He's just getting a slap, I guess.
It's true.
I only think it only feels okay to slap Benny because I really feel like he messed things up with Mimi and Roger.
Yeah.
And in particular, yeah. Who was this young, vulnerable, woman who's a drug addict. And
yeah. Yeah.
I think he made it, he kind of sent her down a spiral that was.
Think of it as a slap to wake him up. Like, not like a slap, like, hey, Benny, come back to us. That kind
of slap. You're right. You're absolutely right. Because that to me, Chris, your point shows us Benny's heart. He's not a good person deep down. And he's clearly married. So why is he hooking up with Mimi?
Right.
That part.
Yeah.
Ugly.
All right.
Okay. So we're going to do that. Benny, you're getting the big slap. The confusing rules of the bohemian lifestyle. You're going to the alarmist jail.
God, that feels good.
So feels we're not good. Sending bohemia. It's whoever came up with these rules.
Yeah.
Or
it's the fact that they just won't be clear about what they
are. Yeah, the community just can't decide what the rules
are. Am I allowed to make money? Because I do need to pay my rent, but I want to be cool.
And art is important.
Yeah, exactly.
We hope, first of all, thank you, Crystal, for being our guest today.
Yeah.
We know how resistant you are, but we love having you on the show.
It's okay? Great doing it with my crew. Yes.
Yeah.
And, we hope everyone has had a happy holiday season, and we wish everyone a happy new year. And stay tuned, because next week we'll be discussing 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year!
Wait, is that what we're talking about? Or was that the really, if somebody's listening to this?
No. That's not what we'll be talking about.
Oh, okay.
But we're just in case you started listening to this around 10:50 p.m. on.
Right.
Yeah. We just did the countdown.
On the 31st. We just wanted to be there with you. Otherwise, fast forward to the credits right now.
The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clinton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey, and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Ramry Island Crocodile Massacre. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/listen. Greenlight.com/listen.